Dit.
To admit, it's getting better. A little better. All the time. To admit, it's getting better. It's getting better. Since you've been mine.
And now, 1160 AM KBDT proudly presents Life Solutions, coaching, counseling, naturopathic medicine, insights for successful living. And getting better with Ann Beal.
We are excited today. We have a wonderful author named Lewis Campbell. We call him Lou. He is a good friend, and he has come out with another book. He has over 50 books. This new one, I think it might be our favorite. It's called Texas Rising, and it is all about the emerging of Texas in the 1800s.
Yes.
And it's got trail riding, cowboys,
interesting
cattle.
And unusual stories. And that's one of Lou's very best features is he takes real life vignettes and experiences, either of his own or that he has read about, heard about, and people he knows, and he puts them together in the most entertaining, interesting way in his books. And so Texas Rising is one of those, and a little bit different from some of the other books that he has done.
It is. And you know, if you are quarantining in or sheltering in, or you love to read, this is, we enjoyed it so much. I just finished it yesterday, and it was a nice escape. And it also visited all the areas that you and I, being in the cattle ranching families,
yeah,
the Slaughters and the Beals. There were a lot of locations in it and things about it that we just loved. If you've never read about that, the Forgotten Cattle King talks about the Beal family and the Slaughter family and the ox shears and all the cattle ranchers back then. But Texas Rising is a collection of stories. But I think our favorite was the first one. And so we have Lou here to join us. Welcome to the show, Lou. Are you there, Dr. Lou? Oh, there you are. Hello.
Okay. Hi, how are you?
We are good. Lou, it's so good to have you. And we've been putting out some information about the show today, and all of our listeners are really looking forward to hearing from you.
Well, I appreciate that.
Now, Lewis, you have classes where you teach people how to write as well. Because after reading this book, you know, I thought, gosh, you know, it'd be so great for people quarantining in this time to write their memories or to write about the quarantine or to just write their book that they, I mean, they say everyone has a book in them. Would you agree?
Well, I agree with you, and I agree with that concept, too. The more you read, the more you increase your vocabulary, and the more you fertilize your imagination. But the basic idea is to communicate, and life's experiences are not all happy. Certainly all this business of being quarantined and being anxious about where the income is going to be coming from, it's really all part of life. And my bride and I have traveled around the world in many different contexts, and what we take for granted here in our country is totally unknown in most of the rest of the world. So when we're inconvenienced, that's only a minor point, especially if you realize what's happening in the rest of the world. Now, I'm off the track a little bit, but the bottom line is to be able to communicate and personally, to be able to find other people, especially older people, who've lived it. And they're really quite eager to talk about it, but nobody seems to be prepared to listen.
Well, and I think, Lou, you have such an incredibly rich background being in classical theater and mime and being a director for classical theater for like 50 years all around the world. We were talking about the theaters you've designed in different areas around the world and all the different countries you've lived in. You are definitely a person that knows what you're talking about when you say that about other countries. It also gives you this rich background for writing. And I think a lot of people could be intimidated by that because they don't have that. But yet what your whole class that you have in Granbury teaches, it's a writing clinic for getting things down on paper, no matter what about you, anything about your life and your memories, and you share how to do that.
Exactly. And like I said, in one case, from my personal experience, I had the opportunity. My mother lived to be 90. Mm. She passed away years ago, but when she was 87, I had the opportunity to interview her with a cassette tape recorder. You don't even see those anymore. I went up and interviewed her, and I said, "Mom, I want you to tell me about your life." And I just said, "I'm going to put this recorder down here on the coffee table between us. Just ignore it. It'll pick up the voices." So I started out and said, "What's the first thing you remember when you were a kid?" And she thought for a moment, and she said, "I remember the factory whistles and the boat whistles going off." She grew up, she was born and raised in Brooklyn. And mm-hmm. she said, "All these whistles were going off, and it was a celebration of the armistice of the First World War." Nobody talks about that anymore.
Right.
No, but it's great that you got to ask her about that. You know, I asked, I did a writing with my grandmother, and she was talking about before electricity, and then when they got electricity, and then when they got their first car, when cars started, and airplane. It was such an incredible thing to write about, and people just don't realize that their life has so much in it. And we just actually got my dad a book like that where he could write about his life. And we would just really encourage everyone to do that. And when I look at you have put out so many books and you tell these stories for Texas Rising, you did a lot of research about Texas, didn't you?
Yes. Well, of course, I lived a lot of it. Some of it, interestingly, came about just by traveling through an area and knowing what happened years ago when our girls were still with us. Our youngest is now 43. But when they were with us in the car, we traveled a lot by car. And we would come across these signs, historical marker ahead. I remember the youngest one said, "Here comes another hysterical marker." Well, some of them were hysterical, but I usually would tell them before we got there what it was about. And they were kind of amused by that. In some cases, we wouldn't even stop, because they were so amused by me telling about what that was. Mm. We had the occasion to trace the Oregon Trail, for example. And it's still available, but who cares? Only people who are interested in reading. And, of course, some of my books and some of the more popular books are the old Westerns. I have had one critic say that it's like a Louis L'Amour reincarnated. Well, I wouldn't presume that. He was a magnificent writer. I read a lot of his work and a lot of Zane Grey and obviously a lot of Shakespeare and a lot of Tolstoy. I read a lot.
Well, in this book, especially Texas Rising, you have Fort Worth on my mind as one of the first chapters.
Yes.
And the areas that you're talking about are Fort Worth back in the 1800s. And you talk about Main Street. You talk about Hell's Half Acre, the Exchange Street, the livestock pens, the stock exchange.
Right. Yeah, a lot of these places still exist.
Yes. You know,
down there.
They do exist.
Yeah.
That's part of what provoked my imagination, to go into the old stockyards mm-hmm. in the north part of Fort Worth.
Yep.
It's all a very big tourist trap.
Yes.
And they have amazing amount of information readily available.
Yeah, they really
do. You have
to
dig a little bit, but when you look at the buildings there, and look, this building was built in 1893. It says right on the building.
Yes.
On the cornerstone. Well, what happened in 1893 to make it? Make them want to have a building like that. Mm-hmm. And it's still not only there, it's occupied.
Going down to Cowtown is one of
the hotel is a great example.
Yes.
You go in there, in the lobby of the hotel, there is very nice, elegant, old furniture, very durable, and a cage, which is the registration area. And one thing ominously not visible is any television anywhere in the lobby.
Yeah, that's good.
Because that's how it used to be. And guess what? People actually have to talk to each other. Well, they do talk to each other simply because of the environment. Now, what does that say about our current world where families don't even eat at the table anymore? They're all locked into their cell phones or they're all watching TV. And no wonder we're becoming, we're downgrading our culture simply because of that kind of behavior.
Well, when you start reading this book, in the first chapter talks about Clyde Curry.
Mm-hmm.
Clyde
mm-hmm.
Curry was finally finished. He had delivered the herd up the widespread of West Texas desert and into the sprawling mm-hmm. cattle pens of the Fort Worth stockyards. With their new
right.
slaughterhouses on the hill bidding for any livestock they could get, the burgeoning cities in the East had many hungry mouths, and even the military required much beef. Mr. Greenleaf W. Simpson from Boston had come west to realize his vision and offered 50 cents per pound on the hoof, more than the other slaughterhouses in the business. So the price for cattle raising had finally risen to a livable wage now. And you go on and you talk about he walked up the exchange street from the livestock pens to the Fort Worth Stockyards Exchange and Hotel building, satisfied with his work and the promise that Jim Dunham would meet him that evening to finalize the sell. And you actually talk about a bank that's still in Fort Worth. And I because of definitely my background with my family, I love this. I love this story. And I noticed that you have other books where you've written about Colorado and different places in Colorado. And I've read those, and there was a tie. I think that was Paradise. The first one was called Your Other Paradise series, Paradise Remembered,
yes.
Paradise, all those books.
Yes.
They were so good.
And you tied that series.
Yes.
And each book has 25 short stories that are actually true.
And you tied these to that because they're going to take the herd from Fort Worth to Colorado. And so you go all the way through Texas in the, which I love that you used, What's his name? Light, the cattleman. Oh, my gosh.
Uh-huh.
You used his trail and Loving.
Oh, okay.
You
talk about Chisholm
Trail.
You talk about the Goodnight Loving Trail.
Why in the world was she doing that?
The Goodnight Loving Trail, yeah.
Was the Goodnight Loving Trail. Charlie Goodnight and Loving developed a trail that went from Fort Worth down to Pecos, which is 400 miles southwest, in order to take the cattle up to Colorado. But the reason they did that is because the Pecos River flows up from the Gulf. It doesn't flow, it flows down to the Gulf, but going to Pecos, the city, the town, and going upriver, they would go by, past Fort Sumter in New Mexico, where there was a large population of Indians that were peaceful but were relying on the military for food and beef. And then they would keep going all the way up the Front Range to Denver. That was the original trail.
Yes, and you know, Goodnight
decides, well, why don't we just cut up the Brazos?
Well,
and
I know.
If you know your history, you would know that by that time, there was a lot of fences up around Lubbock. He said, I'll go up the Brazos and cut over to the Canadian, and I'll save all these 400 miles. Well, you saw what happened in
yes.
the book.
Yes, so, and you know, Charles Goodnight is an incredible. There's so much incredible cattle history for Texas there. You can go to the Goodnight Ranch on your way to Wichita, Wichita Falls, or on the way to Albuquerque, Amarillo. Even when you're cutting through Amarillo. Yes. And
right.
so you can go see that. And he also experimented with hybrid herds that would do better in Texas. And so it was really cool. And Loving, his daughter, Goodnight's daughter, married Loving, Mr. Loving. And so they joined together in the cattle business. And so I was reading, I recognize so many of these people, but it's just great that you wrote about Texas history that way. And it's such an enjoyable read. And I just encourage people to get the book, Texas Rising, the historic fiction of the great state of Texas. And I know for your original title, you wanted it to be Emerging Texas or something. It was Texas Emerging from the 1800s. And it is such a good story. Now, Lou, when we come back, we want to help people know how to write these memories for themselves. And I know that you have a class clinic. Are you going to be doing that online?
Yes, it is online.
It's online.
For the most part, I have people all over the world that are writing.
Yes.
It's not because I'm a writer. It's because I'm trying to provoke them to use what they have in their experiences and in their vocabulary to communicate the ideas that they have about their life. It's not an ego trip. I don't write for ego purposes. I write for passion. I write in spite of the fact that the books are not flying off the shelf anywhere.
Well, let's tell them when they get back.
Know how to get them and enjoy reading them.
Yes, and we have to take a break and hear from our partners. When we get back, we're going to talk about this class and how to sign up for it. So stay right here so you can hear Dr. Lou teach you how to write your memories.
I've got to admit, it's getting better. It's a little better all the time.
And now here's more Getting Better with Ann Beal on 1160 AM KBDT.
Lou Campbell, the author of Texas Rising, he is helping us today. He has over 50 books he's written. The Memories for Tomorrow, he has a writing clinic for those interested in publishing their stories. We really encourage you during this time. It would be great if you could even just write what's happening, what you see around you, wherever you live. You know, if things are more isolated, if downtown is blank, you know, if you don't see anyone down there, or if there's mask people are wearing everywhere. I mean, we were just talking about it at breakfast, weren't we, Jim?
Mm-hmm. We were.
Just how strange it is.
Yeah, it's a totally different experience from what we've ever had before. So
Lou, are you there?
Hello, Lou, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, there you go. Okay. I was like, where are you? Yes, okay. So we were talking about online for you for your class. If they would like to reach you, number one, they can just reach you at dr.lou, L-O-U, at enclaveofthearts.org. But how, an enclave, E-N-C-L-A-V-E, of the arts, A-R-T-S, .org. How would they sign up?
Hearts, because that's the way computers do it.
Okay.
It enclave of the arts looks like enclave of hearts.
Enclave of Heart.
.org. It's an org, though, not a com or not net.
Yeah. So how did they sign up for your class?
Well, if they write me and tell me what it is they're trying to do, mm-hmm. then I'll be able to give them an adequate quote that will assist them in generating it. I have a fellow in Plano that's writing right now.
Yes.
And he's getting a little hung up, which is the biggest problem. In writing, you have to constantly write a little bit each day so that it becomes a habit.
So that's why there's no...
If you put that off till the weekend,
yes.
that will be very difficult because your whole mindset changes. Having finished a week of work, now what are you going to do? Oh, I have to write. No, you don't. You want to write. It's a matter of a starter fluid package. What is it you're trying to do and why and to whom?
So would they? Can they text you on your cell, or do you just want them to reach you by email?
They could do that, although that becomes a real problem. And if they call me, I won't answer if I don't recognize a number because of all these robocalls.
So let me say the email again, and I'll put it on the show page if you want to go to Getting Better with Ann Beal. So dr.lou, L-O-U.
It's D-R-L-O-U. There's no dot after the doctor. D-R-L-O-U.
Oh, you put it up here like it was Dr.Lou. Okay. So Dr. Lou at enclaveofthearts.org. Okay.
Right.
And that's Dr. Lou Campbell.
If you're interested in writing as a subject, that will help me filter through, and I will respond.
Yes, he will respond. So to start, and we only have 2 minutes right now to really talk about this, you have the different sections that you talk about, and you break it down into 4 parts.
Right.
So
it doesn't matter how big their vocabulary is or if they've never had any experience writing before. We start with where they are, and what will happen is they'll discover they need more vocabulary. They don't need it at the moment, but they could always enhance that. Some of the best things I've had, best responses I've had from my books is people will write and thank me for telling them to go to the dictionary with some of the words that I use. It's not, I'm not trying to be clever or profound, but when you communicate, even on the streets, the people that try to communicate to each other, most of the people have a you know phrase in there.
Yeah.
You know means they don't know how to communicate. Am I coming through to you? So you don't write, you know, in the text. That's a good example. All you do is find what it is you're trying to say and what's the most efficient way to say it.
I think most people, when they're writing a story or a book, they probably wouldn't put that. But I know for me, when I start writing, I think that's a boring word. I wonder if there's a better word for that, you know, for
right.
It's overcast. Oh, okay, so look up balmy or whatever. Right. Now, Jim is really good, and Dr. Slaughter is joining us. Of course, I didn't introduce you today. Is that why you've been so quiet?
Oh, no, I'm good. I'm glad to be here as always, and really appreciate you, Lou, and always enjoy talking to you, especially about your books and your writing.
Well, and Jim, you know, he has an incredible vocabulary, probably for how much he's read.
I've read all my life, and it's just one of the things that I love doing, and when I have spare time, I'm usually reading.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's I love it.
Same as me. I do that same thing, too. In fact, I read all the time. In fact, I'm at the library down here in Granbury a good deal of the time. The people know me already down there pretty well.
No,
and you know what I'm after is usually not available. I'm usually into a library loan book kind of thing.
Yeah, and I know the more people read, the bigger their vocabulary is because they learn
right.
so much. I know that for people, we just want them to get things down on paper and just to start. So when we come back from break, I want you to be able to just start telling them, if you'll just start going through some of the basics of what they can do now to start writing, Lou, that would be great. Okay, so stay right here and we'll start on the four sections, just how to start into your own memories.
It's getting better, a little better, all the time.
If you'd like to get better, call Ann right now. 214-810-8255. 214-810-TALK. Now more with Ann Beal on 1160 AM KBDT.
You know, Dr. Lou, I really encourage people to write now because daily life looks very different now than it did 4 months ago. Just on a regular basis, don't you think?
Yes, I think. I mean, it's true of every day, even though now it's more acute because, first of all, they have more time because if they're, I don't mean locked in their home, but if they're obliged to be at home, there's only so much TV you can watch. I guess that's one of the good things about this.
Yes.
People get so sick of the same crap that's on television.
Yeah, there's.
And they fail to realize that that's an alternative to writing, and it's a lethal alternative as far as their education.
Well, and
when
I,
you're spoon-fed on
yes.
television, you're given the images. When you
yes.
read a book, and you certainly have read a book that you've also seen a movie about, inevitably, your reading of it is better than the video or than the film, especially if you read it first. Because
yes.
when you read it after you've seen the movie, you say, oh, yeah, this is the scene that, well, it may or may not be. It's a different interpretation of material.
I think that unusual scenes are even playing out in people's homes that they could write uh-huh. about. You know, even just getting tired of searching, trying to find stuff. Anything, life is just different for people, whether they're in their homes or their parks or they go to grocery stores or they just in streets across the country. I mean, things are so different. And you're right. It's so clear now and things are kind of sped up how severely different they are. But in general, a person's life, because you look at you've lived, you know, 75 years and you look at everything, all the knowledge you have based on your history to put things down on paper. But in light of everything that's gone on in this 4 months, I mean, people have lived what normally would have taken like 10 or 15 years for all these things
right.
to have evolved. I mean, look at how many books could be written just
right.
about the last 4 months.
Well, and the problem is you have to discover, they say, well, I'd really like to write. Is it an escape for the individual? Or you have to ask yourself the question, what is the story that you're trying to present? Yeah. And who is your audience?
Who's your audience?
I have another dear friend who is in the writing work back in North Carolina, and she's writing children's books, children's stories. Another one in San Antonio who's not one of my clients, but she's very close because she's writing this stuff already, and it's wonderful. The use of imagination. And, you know, ultimately, what experiences do you have? I have another young lady here was only an eighth grader here in Granbury, and she wants to write. I thought she was older, actually, because she's got quite a good vocabulary, but she's in the eighth grade, and she sent me the first part of her manuscript, and it's very well written, very well thought out, but there are other kinds of issues. What is the point of view that you're writing from? Is it a first-person point of view? Is using the word I, or using the word he or she? becomes a third person. In some cases, it's better if it's a first person. You saw that in Texas Rising.
Yeah.
In some of the stories there. Some of them were not first person. Some of them were third person. But it depends on how you employ the words.
Well, you had and a first person from Clyde Curry's perspective.
Right.
So you could make a character. I know that for you, you use specific locations as important for your story. Is that what spurred the ideas? Was you said actually being down in Cowtown spurred the idea?
Well, that's kind of interesting because one of the stories in the book is called Lonesome Dutchman's Flat. And if you drive down 281 towards San Antonio from here, you don't go down 35W, you go down, down 35, you go down a U.S. highway. And you go through a little town of Hyco, and then halfway toward another town, well, almost to the other town of Hamilton, you're driving across this flat territory, wide open spaces. And all of a sudden, the road dips down in this little, pretty little valley, and it's called Hidden Valley.
Hidden Valley.
And there's a place at the bottom of that called Dutchman's Hidden Valley. And I've driven that route for years. And I know it provoked the idea for that story about a Dutchman who immigrated when the Texas was still a republic, and he wanted to be alone. He wanted to be a hermit, so he went up and built a place out in the middle of nowhere, and lo and behold, everybody starts coming. Totally reverse what happens, but it's a comedy in that regard.
So Dutchman's Hidden Valley.
The location is so, it provokes so much. And virtually all of the Paradise series in Colorado is exactly that. I don't know how it is I can remember. I don't have a photographic memory. But I do remember when I start thinking of something and all of a sudden it opens up for me. I remember that. And it's reality that is recalling it. But then how do you temper that with the vocabulary that you have?
Would you suggest people add pictures? Because if you think about that Hidden Valley, because I know you showed me a picture of that valley in Colorado. You showed me a picture with the mountains behind it.
Yeah,
and pictures say so much, and they add so much to a story.
Well, they can, but they also limit, because if you identify the location, a good example of that is the Eiffel Tower. For people that have seen the Eiffel Tower, it's in the context of their having seen it. Did they see it on public transportation? Did they actually visit it and go up in it, go up to the restaurant on the second level, or did they go all the way to the top? One of our daughters is a very good artist, and when she was in the ninth grade, she did a picture of the Eiffel Tower in a fog. How many people do that? They just draw the Eiffel Tower. No,
yeah.
She didn't want that. She wanted it hidden. And so a point of view there is it's not the tower, it's the experience. And much later, she actually experienced the Eiffel Tower. So she was drawing it from what she had seen in pictures and everything. There's no doubt that it is the Eiffel Tower because it's kind of a unique promontory in locations around the world.
Well, and I think people...
How do you apply it?
Yes.
If you use too many pictures, then you might as well do a video of
That's
the experience,
true.
And that becomes a lot more extensive.
Well, and I just want people to start, and I want them to ignite the imagination. I know you have those four sections, the starter fluid, igniting the imagination, setting the story, and then the elements of the story. And so I think people get a little overwhelmed on how to do it. And when you look up how to write a book, because I know with Jim's book, he's written a lot of books, but to actually start getting them published, you know, it can be overwhelming, like 23 steps to get to writing a book or, you know, that, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in there. And you have it narrowed down to four sections, and that makes it so much more simple. And, you know, if people just think plot, character, thing, rhythm, I mean, they get overwhelmed, right? And so I think you offering an online class to kind of help them, and there is no time. There's not like the class is like a certain amount of time. You're willing to work with them. And like you did Jim. I mean, you've helped Jim a lot, and just to give him ideas, and when he got held up and things kind of blocked him, like, you know, he didn't want to plagiarize how to use some test or something, you gave him suggestions on what to do. And I think that you offer that to other people. What do you think, Jim? What do you think was the biggest help from Lou for you?
I think his just a consistent encouragement. Lou would text me pretty consistently and say, how's your book coming? Have you published yet? This, yeah,
because and you were near
continue
publishing,
to say but, those things, and yeah. And I was holding off. There was just something that I knew wasn't quite right yet, but you continued to encourage me and exhort me, and did it in a very kind way. This is your conscience speaking.
This is your conscience speaking.
It was funny. And yeah. So that was very, very good for me. And there were some suggestions along the way. But I think if anything, if you helped me in any way, that was the main way. Just your encouragement. And I knew you were a valuable asset. And I knew that you would be there if I had questions and all kinds of things like that. So just right. walking with me through it was a big deal. That's why it can be so important for people to get on your website and to take advantage of the teaching that you do. And you've been a teacher for a long time, Lou, I know. And so they would benefit right. from that. Can I ask this question, though? I was wondering, what would you tell somebody, Lou, who said, we would say, I've thought about writing before, but I just don't think anybody would be interested in reading what I wrote.
Well, that's the point where I mentioned in the starter fluid, who is your audience?
Mm-hmm.
Who would read this kind of material? I had that years ago, and I wrote some work that was about what old people think. Kind of and that, by the way, is included in the Paradise series, several of those books. It's like going to a retirement center or a nursing home.
Uh-huh.
And people with good intentions put their family members in nursing homes because they're capable of handling them medically and otherwise. But in some cases, they soothe their conscience by they're being cared for, even though the family itself is not caring for them. They're simply paying to have them cared for. And yet those people sit there and vegetate with other people. Many of them can't even hear. Some of them can't even see. But if you go and hold their hand and talk to them a minute, you will be overwhelmed by what they have to say and what their life was like.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take much encouragement to get a person to open up about their life. And many of the things I've learned and many of the things I've experienced and applied toward my books come from exactly that. Listen to people.
And, you know, you want your memories written down. I know that Dr. Howard Hendricks, who's also a friend of yours, he was one of my professors.
A very dear friend, yes.
Yes, and he was a professor with Jim. He was talking about how people, what their kids will think of them. And what did he say, Jim?
He said, your kids don't really respect to any great extent the things you did, no matter how good you were at them. You know, you could have been a ball player. You could have been an actor, an author, whatever. Your kids don't care because it's not their life.
And they just don't really understand until they get a lot older and they live through things. And I think that for me with older people, when I get the book and I start writing, they're and asking them, like, what kind of music did you like when you were a kid? What did you dress? What were your clothes like? What was your favorite TV shows when you were a kid? What did you do for fun when you hung out with your friends? And you just ask these questions and you start writing them down in these memory books, right? Their stories always fascinate me beyond. I'm just like, wow, that is so cool. Like my grandmother talking about they were one of the first people to get electricity and what that was like and changing their oil lamps to electric lamps or the first they had one of the first cars and what that was like. And that was incredible. And so you can take stories and write books from that. But I really encourage, even if you're not writing a book out there, just even essays. And you can do essays with pictures. You could do videos. But I just encourage you to create kind of your own written piece that illustrates your life right now. And if it's taking what's happening now and turning it into fiction, well, you almost don't have to. It's almost like fiction. It's almost like science fiction.
Yeah, on the ugly side.
It's like, what? People walk around in masks. And, you know, you think what they used to say about the year 2020, that we were all going to be in spacesuits and things like that. And instead, we're all wearing masks. You know, it could be its own kind of science fiction. But I think that really encouraging people to put it down, because they do say that there's a book in everyone. And in your case, Lou, there were 50 books or more. You've still got a long way to go.
More than that.
Interestingly, it was only a couple of years ago, my youngest daughter, who's a medical doctor in Fort Worth, was out for dinner. And she said, Dad, would you do me a favor? I said, sure. She said, would you write your autobiography? Well, all of the Paradise series is autobiographical, but it's all fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no such place as Paradise, Colorado. The town was something narrow, Colorado, and it's 200 feet underwater in a reservoir that the government put in long after I was there.
Yeah, they flooded.
But it was in the mountain country. And so I've started writing my autobiography. I'm sure everybody's thrilled and can't wait to get it. And so far I've gotten to 1977.
I think it
is. And I have 150,000 words. it's about 400 pages. Who's going to read that thing?
Well, I think that there's so many cool things about your life and mime. I mean, mime, doing mime and mime theater all over the country. You know, you got into mime really early on. And when I'm in Europe, I see mime everywhere. You know, I think it's not as familiar to people here in this country.
You're right. Because the whole idea of theater and art, if it is entertainment, art is not entertainment. Art is something deeper and richer in a person's life. And a lot of my writing, I don't mean fiction, I'm talking about other writing, is much more focused on that. And our culture, unfortunately, because of the technology that has been able to be developed in my lifetime, by the way, television started in 1949. That was the first network. And in 1959, I had a long stay in a hospital, a community hospital in Colorado, and there was no TV sets in the room. Another patient came in who was my age. He was from Denver, and he just enlisted in the Navy, and he came over to see his girlfriend before he went to basic.
Hey, Lou, I'm having to break. We got to take...
Everything's bigger in Texas, and your tax refund shouldn't be any different. Call Checks and Balances Texas now at 469-216-8161. Get the tax assistance you need and keep your social distancing at the same time. The best virtual tax services in the Metroplex are just a phone call away. Trust the veteran tax professionals at Checks and Balances Texas for the answers to all your tax questions, including everything you need to know about the tax filing requirements to qualify for your COVID-19 stimulus check. Whether it's assistance with individual or business taxes, or even bookkeeping services, Checks and Balances Texas is there to help. They offer tax filing, planning, and resolution services to clients nationwide. Call Checks and Balances Texas right now at 469-216-8161 or book an appointment online. CheckBalancesTX.com. Join the movers and shakers of the DFW Metroplex as a client of Checks and Balances Texas. 469-216-8161 or CheckBalancesTX.com. Getting better all the time. Now back to Ann Beal on 1160 AM KBDT.
We were having so much fun on break talking about Chuck Wagon and Goodnight, Charles Goodnight, cattle riding and trail riding and those Chuck Wagon cooks and the everything. Just escaping into that world of Texas history, fiction, just all about what happened back in the 1800s. It's such a cool book, Texas Rising. By Lewis Campbell. Again, we just encourage you to get it. You can get it on Amazon for like $12. It's not very expensive or something like that. It's such a great read during this time just to take you to an enjoyable place to escape. We just read at the pool yesterday, and I was just floating around reading, just really enjoying it, loving it. It's such a great time to do that. Thank you for this writing, Lou. I think more than anything for us with our families and everything, it was this one. I enjoyed your Paradise series for Colorado. It was such a wonderful series back in Colorado, but I couldn't relate as well as I could to this one because it's Texas.
Yeah, you have Brazos River and Canadian.
There are several others that are about Texas already out, and there's some that are combining much of the West, including Texas. I'm currently writing one that is about Texas. Again, it's about the Texas Rangers. And interestingly, the original Rangers weren't even paid employment-wise. They were paid by land.
Yes.
The original government gave them pieces of land for engaging in solving some of the legal problems they were having back in the early days of Texas. And some of the Texas Rangers were not the pure and upright kind of people you might have thought. They actually were rather rankless people. Some of them had legal problems themselves.
They weren't like Walker Ranger.
Because they were good in what they were doing.
Yeah, I was talking about Chuck Norris, you know, Texas Ranger, Walker Ranger.
Right.
He does do some. He does some older ones, you know, like he in that TV series. He did some flashbacks to the old Western Rangers, right? But in general, it's not quite like the show. But yeah, I actually really enjoyed your writing because it tells you if you don't know a lot about Texas history and you want to be proud to live here, you know, it's really cool to go back and see all the things that happened. And you have the first bank draft that happened there, opening the first bank account in the bank. And it's an interesting idea. And people thought it was weird. I mean, Clyde, the guy that you have in this story, he couldn't quite understand where they were telling him that they would put it on credit and he could use it around town because he was carrying his money on him. That's why they all had weapons. They had their money on them that they made all the time. They carried it with them. They weren't going to leave it anywhere. And so,
you know, one of the other issues in one of the stories called Unarmed and Extremely Dangerous.
Yes.
About a woman sheriff. And she doesn't have to carry a weapon because everybody respects women and also respects the law. And in that story, there's a reference to a man who's called a Buffalo Soldier. Anybody have any idea what a Buffalo Soldier is?
Sure
it's
do.
A black person.
Yep.
No, I didn't know that. You read that story.
Solved the problem with a quartermaster that came to town, and he solved it. And I'll just mention it in passing. It's not promoting Afro-Americans or Mexicans. I have all kinds of people in my life and in history. They were just like the woman who needed a pelt.
Well, hold on. Hold on, Lou. Hold on. I have to ask you a question, though, about this female sheriff, okay? Because Jim was telling me a little bit about that, and I said, did you find that from history? Because I've never heard of a female sheriff, or did you make that up?
Oh, no, there are female sheriffs.
Really?
In Texas and in Montana, there were a couple of big names, and you didn't put up any crap there. But they were armed. This one, intentionally, I had her unarmed because everybody else around her respected the law. And by the way, that's the one where I introduced the old-fashioned tiller-steering vehicles around before the turn of the 20th century. They weren't readily available, but remember, we're talking about the age when railroads were functional. There were a lot of things technologically happening. And so that's one story I use that. I'm not really fond of some of those because the old ride on a wagon or on a horse, and I love that. I love riding on horses, and I love working with horses still.
Well, Lou, we thank you so much for being on. We did enjoy your book. And again, there is another book out there called Texas Rising. It kind of bummed me out. Don't get that one if it doesn't say Lewis Campbell. We want you to get the one by Lewis Campbell, Texas Rising, on the emerging Texas in the history in the 1800s. We just want to make sure you get the right one and enjoy this reading. And Lou, is there anything else you want to share about your books real quick before we end and your class? You have 20 seconds.
I hope people enjoy reading. And the one thing it can do for them, I had a quote, I put that on Facebook not long ago.
10 seconds.
You discover you have wings when you open a book and read.
Yes, you discover
it's
you have wings.
It's the process of developing a theater audience one at a time.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for getting